and welcome to the 23rd episode of the Not Your Mama's Gamer podcast, a podcast where we talk about games and gaming from a feminist perspective. My name is Samantha Blackman, and I am joined tonight, as with every episode, by my two co-hosts, Alex Lane and Sarah White.
What's up? Woo!
A little bit about myself. I am an associate professor here at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, Indiana, where I specialize in minority and digital rhetorics. And right now, my digital rhetoric stuff takes a very specific slant towards games and game theory. Ladies?
I'm Alex Lane. I'm a PhD student at Purdue University in wonderful West Lafayette, and I'm studying rhetoric and composition, specializing in rhetoric technology, digital writing, and professional writing, focusing particularly right now on writing my prospectus about the game design industry and gender issues. And I promise, Sam, it will be much more specific than that in my actual prospectus.
That will be good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
I just figure I'll put those words on a page. It sounds kind of sexy. Like gender issues and games. Period. Done. PhD.
You got it. Signed, sealed, and delivered. No doubt. Well, and I'm, of course, Sarah White, and I am joining these two fine ladies from Michigan City, Indiana, which is Purdue. Yeah, Michigan City, Indiana, which everybody's like, you live in Michigan? I'm like, no, I live in Indiana, but it's called Michigan City. Because Lake Michigan is a long story. But Purdue North Central is where I am a teacher, and sort of studying whatever and teaching whatever they let me and trying to earn a living and making my way and hoping that the snow this season won't be too bad. So that's me up here to the north. And yeah, that's what I know.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So tonight we will go about things in our normal fashion. We'll start out with our fun stuff, what you're playing, what you're reading, what you're drinking. And then we'll move into news, games, and issues. So this week has been an interesting one.
Busy.
It's been a busy one. It's been a busy week. These last 2 weeks have been busy. We've had two kind of blockbuster big ticket game releases this week. These last 2 weeks we had one. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3.
Yeah, we did.
And which I did not get at launch, but I have been playing. Awesome. And I'm not a huge first-person shooter fan anymore, but I have to say the Call of Duties have gotten Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 got me. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 got me.
No one likes the Black Ops except for me, I think.
I didn't play Black Ops. Ops came out too. Yeah. It came out too soon after Modern Warfare 2 for me.
Yeah.
I just liked watching someone else play it. I did see it. I just didn't play it.
See. Okay. Yeah. I've seen folks play it. I've seen you play it, Alex Lane.
Yes, you have.
Yeah. It didn't do it for me. But like I said, Modern Warfare 3, I've been playing. I'm definitely going to talk about a bit more about that later. Yeah, and everybody knew this one was coming. Skyrim. Yeah,
Skyrim.
Dragonborn! I have only been waiting for that game since they announced it.
You seriously have been talking about it forever.
As soon as they announced it, I started like shouting Dragonborn on my Facebook page.
Yes, you did.
Listen, I signed up for Gamefly tonight specifically for Skyrim.
Yes, well, so, you should have.
Yeah, that's how intense this is.
So I have been playing Skyrim like crazy. And I rolled a red guard woman simply because I try to do something else. I try, Alex and I were talking about this today, I try to do magic. I try to be a thief or rogue or whatever the hell you want to call it. I try. But that's not me. That's not me. You know, I am very much, you know, and it's not even so much run and gun. I am run and beat the fuck out of you. I am big on melee weapons. Oh, great.
Now we have to make this an explicit episode.
Uh-oh.
Well, shit.
Because the other 22 haven't been.
Yeah, you're very much a melee player for sure.
I am a melee player. Mm-hmm. And so it was either Red Guard, Nord, or new race for the series is Orc as playable character. The Orcs didn't do it for me. They were I just didn't like the way they looked. I couldn't make an Orc look the way that I wanted them to look. So I knew it was either going to be Red Guard or Nord for me. I actually rolled a Red Guard first, and I'm going to go back later on and roll a Nord, and I'm going to make it look just like P and make her like badass.
You always do that. That's so funny.
I'm going to make her look just like crazy long hair and all, and make her just badass. I'm going to give her a Spider-Man t-shirt and a pink tutu.
That's great.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. I love it. This is the greatest thing you have ever said.
Like my real kid. So that's what I'm playing right now. You know, and I still have my issues with the races the way that they set up the races and some of the narratives. And there's definitely a post coming on Skyrim at a later date.
Once you're done, like, being sucked into playing Skyrim.
Well, you know, I'm sucked into playing, but I for some strange reason, I can't ignore it even while I'm playing it, but it doesn't stop me from enjoying it.
See, that's one of the things I love about my life is I have the capability of being completely delusional about things, so I just delude myself. I almost lost it when you tried to tell me that Harry Potter was racist. I was like, no. I plugged my ears. I turned away. Remember?
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. That's a good point.
There are some things I just don't want to hear about.
I'm sorry, Alex. But that doesn't stop me from going to midnight shows with you.
That's true, which I very much appreciate.
And I can say that other than that, I'm trying to think of what else I've been playing. Not a whole hell of a lot. That has like totally and completely sucked all of my time dry. Alex made me install Family Feud and Friends on my phone today.
Which is super fun, right?
Alex.
It was, well, you know, it's pretty stupid because it doesn't allow you to answer questions in the same way that like the game would.
Well, so, you know, if you and your high expectations.
Me and my high expectations.
Well, how much you got to pay for these apps? Because, you know,
this is free.
I'm like slow to the party and I have my fancy smancy phone and I'm still I'm always worried in the middle of the night. I'm going to be like, oh my God, how the fuck do I call 911? You know what I mean? Cause it's like, but like, I don't even know how to do
what you're talking about.
Well, like, no, because it's so complicated, right? I got to do this. So apps are free or do I got to pay apps?
This one is free. Some of them you have to pay. Some of them are free and then you buy shit as you go, but.
All right. Yeah. All right. Okay.
So, yeah, Family Feud and Friends is my new iPhone app. And I actually reinstalled Cooking Dash and Diner Dash on my phone because they did updates to pretty much big updates to both and added like, you know, a whole new series of levels to both because I had beat both like forever ago. Mm-hmm. And time management games keep me sane in grocery store lines and stuff like that. So I reinstall those to play the new levels and then I'll uninstall them again.
I like those. I like those games.
So that's what I've been playing.
Fun. I feel like I'm always going second. I'm sorry, Sarah. Do you want to go?
No, you please. I'm busy looking at apps on my phone now.
Okay, so I played a few different games. I played the Family Feud and Friends that Sam was talking about, and I had a much more positive view of it, I think. I really enjoyed it a lot. And the only problem I've been having is that some people that I know are playing like crazy. So I have like 15 things in my queue from like one person, 15 from another person, like to help them out with that fast money round. So it's been a little overwhelming. But it is tons of fun. I played Iron Grip Marauders, which is a, I think it's an indie game. They did like a free thing on Skype last week for that. You could try it out. And that was fine. It wasn't my cup of tea, but I will tell you, Fortrix 2, which is the other indie game that I played this week, was awesome. So I'm going to make that one my indie game of the week and talk about that in a little bit. But of course, Modern Warfare 3 has taken every minute of my waking time since it came out. So I really am loving Modern Warfare 3. I play multiplayer. I haven't played the campaign. I know I meant to try it today, Sam, so I could talk to you about it, but I didn't. I'm multiplayer all the way. I've been having a ton of fun with it, as most people probably already saw, which I won't hash out again. On the blog, I wrote a post about things I liked and things I didn't like, sort of my first impressions of it. But I'm going to. I haven't played the campaign, I think, since Modern Warfare 2 or the one before that. I forget what that's called. I don't remember. It's been a few iterations. So yeah, I'm kind of excited to go back and play the campaign. Except when I found out it was driving based, but whatever.
Ew,
And then I played some Skyrim, and I rolled a Dark Elf. And I rolled a Dark Elf because it's kind of like the oh shit class for me, which is how I like to play games. Like, I want to run in and get like 50 dudes on me and hit my fire button and just start burning everybody. I don't care. You know, like, I don't want to go slashing with my sword. I can't do that. I don't have enough coordination. I don't want to be shooting bow and arrows. I want to be standing there just burning the shit down. So I rolled a Dark Elf, and I'm very excited about it. I had so much fun playing that game. I don't own it yet, but Sam let me borrow her copy for a little while.
That's intense.
Yeah. So I think it freaked some people out, because I got a TV, a flat screen, and an Xbox in my office. So I have my headphones plugged into my TV, and I'm like sitting there playing, and people are walking by. Like, one of my students came in because he had a meeting with me. He's like, oh, sorry to interrupt your playing Xbox in the middle of the day on a Wednesday, but that's cool.
Research, yo.
I know, right?
Right. It was funny. And the way she put it, that is the way she explained it to me when she came in my office. She was like, yeah, I rolled a Dark Elf. And I was like, why'd you roll a Dark Elf? You know, I'm like, melee character. She's like, I need an oh shit button. And I was like, huh? She was like, you know, the button you can hit when you go, oh shit, and you really just need to get out of where you are.
Uh-huh. That's how I play and win at Mortal Kombat every time. You just have to memorize the oh shit buttons.
There you go.
That's how I roll. So, I tried to add a new segment there. Did you see that at the below my thing there? It's the what I'm waiting for, because I'm really, really, really excited about a game that doesn't come out till December 9th called Trine 2. So that's me. That's what I'm doing.
Very cool. Have you played Trine yet?
I haven't played Trine, no.
See?
Well,
it will make you want trying to that much more.
I probably watched 2 hours of video and looked up articles and looked at pictures. I am so excited. I can't even stand it. I haven't felt this way about a game since Tiny Bang Story. So there.
No, dude, what's trying then? You got to give us a little bit. What should I be feeling? You know, the excitement, or
you can actually get trying on Steam. It was actually in the I got it in the Frozen Bite Humble Bundle.
Oh,
yeah. It's a action game, you can.
So yeah,
this one's gonna be beautiful though. It's like game of art type stuff.
It is like the original was actually very pretty as well. I had to look to see when it originally came out. It originally came out in 2009. And they describe it as a physics-based action game where three characters allow clever solutions to challenges created by hazardous puzzles and threatening enemies.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I can't even stand it.
And, you know, I'm a big puzzle game person. So I'm really down for that. Like I said, I picked it up in the Frozen by Humble Bundle. You know what? Let me look.
Don't I probably have it then? Didn't you share that Humble Bundle with me?
I was going to say, because I have, well, because one of the bundles that I bought, when I bought the one after that, I think they gave you all the one, they gave you another copy of, or they gave you the bundle beforehand too, but I had already bought the bundle beforehand. Mm-hmm. So I think I may have given it to you. So if it wasn't that one, it was another one. And I'll double check, because I may actually.
If have I it. Own Trine and I haven't like noticed it Uh-oh. In my library, I think I have a serious problem with how many games I have in my library on Steam. Then no, I don't have it.
Okay, let me put it like this: the first video game that I ever fell in love with was probably Ico. Mm-hmm. Is it beautiful like Ico, or
what's Ico like? I'm not familiar with that game.
You never played Ico, Samantha? You played Ico.
Actually, I didn't play Ico.
But you know what I mean.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like the same kind of artistic quality of it's like Shadow of Colossus.
How do you spell it?
ICO.
Oh.
It's a fabulous game, yeah.
It is. I think it's because it's a more recent game and graphics have improved, it's actually a prettier game than Ico.
Okay,
get it on Steam. You can get it on Steam, and you can also get the demo on Steam.
Oh, I'll probably check that out. I'll check the demo out.
If you want to check it out, and I'll tell you exactly how much it is on Steam. It's $9.99.
That's not too bad.
On Steam right now.
So it came out in 2001. Ico?
No, 9. Oh.
Well, Ico. Ico's been out for a while. I think for its time and for what it was doing, it was just gorgeous. I mean, artistic, beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm going to check
great sound effects. I loved it. I really couldn't get enough of it. It was sort of a puzzle game. You did have some fighting now and then.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Ico is a classic. And then, as far as I understand it, and I've seen them, I think, bundled together, Ico and Shadow of Colossus, because it's that it's a Japanese company, but it seems to have an Oriental flavor, but just absolutely gorgeous graphics, you know, just incredible. Shadow of Colossus to me is underrated as a game, but I mean, not to steal any kind of thing from Trine, but I just was, you know, games that are beautiful in a very artistic way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, Sarah, we cut you off. So what's your
plan? Well, no, I mean, I might as well hit mine. Well, I'm not telling anybody anything new to say that I've been, once again, still climbing out of my hole of Words with Friends. It's getting deeper.
You are not talking about Words with Friends,
no,
though.
No, I totally
How
am.
How addicted are you to this game?
I am not addicted. I am trapped. Do you understand? And like more and more people now are like, oh, I must play. And then I even had one person say, oh, I totally loved your post about Words with Friends. So it's like snowballing. Okay. So it's a life of its own. And just, you know, FYI, I am beating Dr. B. But anyway, that's a side note. Okay. So I also... there's a news story. I don't mean to preempt, but it's the one about Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Mario 3D, and now and then he wears the raccoon skin, and it gives him certain abilities. Well, PETA didn't like it, and they had a news story, and justified or not, anyway, they have their own video game. Okay,
I was about to say, what the hell does that have to do with what you're playing?
No,
I was like, did I like black out and miss what you were saying? Because I am so lost.
No, you guys are fine. It's called Mario Kills.
I know, I have it on my news list to talk
about. Tanuki or whatever. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
It's to help him get his fur back. I, in fact, played the game. It's a game. PETA is offering a video game.
They're so getting sued for it as of today.
What?
If you scroll down on our Google Doc there, you'll see they're getting sued as of today.
Oh, they're getting sued. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, sure, because it's a video game and you play... through as this raccoon and you're trying to get your skin back. Anyway, I played it because I thought, well, this is weird. And just like with the Tea Party Zombies, you know, I was like, this is newsworthy. Let me play it. So I did play that. I also, in preparation for our first-person shooter podcast tonight, played a really cool game called Stick Shootout. Did you guys ever play these Flash games? You're a stick man. going through like this little city, and it's very simple, very basic, and you're like shooting other little stick men. I don't know. It was the funnest, most fun, funnest thing I've played in a while. And then they had
funnerist.
Funnerist. It was the funnerist. Well, you have a PhD almost, so I'll try.
Defer to my terrible grammatical and spelling judgment.
Higher-ish education, yeah. Anyway, it was super fun, and that was bizarre because it's so simple. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it wasn't like high graphics or anything. You're just a stick figure shooting each other. Anyway, it was cool. And Damnation, which was offering a narrative over top of the game Doom. So, like, Doom and all the levels that you play, they were giving, like, seriously, like, text and narrative over top of it. And you get to make certain, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it was fascinating to play. Anyway, those are the things that I was sort of toying with over these last 2 weeks, trying to prepare myself for our podcast. I didn't play the cool ones. I wanted to, but
yeah, stuff happens.
I'm kind of cheap. Yeah.
I hate flash games.
Oh, Samantha Black, why?
Because they don't. They don't give me the level of immersion that I need. They don't give me the control that I need. Mm. And they very, very rarely, well, I won't say I hate all Flash games. Okay, but most of them.
I like your psychological point about immersion, because that's a huge element of gaming.
Especially for me, because a lot of times I play games, especially stuff like shooters and melee games, because I need to get aggression out. And flash games don't let me do that.
Well, I don't understand why you'd have to get aggression out. You have, like, the least stressful job of anyone I've
played. Seriously, it's so tranquil.
You can bite me. And
well, no, but that's why I like flash games, I think, because I don't have to piss with anything but just violence. You know what I mean? Like, these little stick men, I shot them, and I loved it. You know, like...
No, see?
No, you did not enjoy that. No. No, Sarah.
Thank you. You're right. I was so wrong. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Sam. I didn't mean to...
I didn't really enjoy it.
I need to see, you know, people like scream, fall, body parts fly off, 1080 and 1080i.
Hell yeah.
When I got issues. And a flash game ain't giving me that.
No, these ones were really good, though. I was really impressed.
Games that have like real deep narratives, games that I can get into that are meaty enough that I can get into for a substantial amount of time and pull me in, not only with the graphics and the gameplay, but also with the story. I'm not getting that from a flash game.
I like that kind too, but you have to say, like, there's a lot of indie games that are like flash based now that are pretty.
That's why I said most. I changed it and said most because, indie games are getting a whole lot better. Because
even like the Binding of Isaac, like, didn't. There's not a ton to it, but it's still
got there's something like rich narrative. About it. Like, yeah, like a depth. I don't know. The stick
is sacrilegious, and you're going to hell for playing it.
Well, just because you go to church, okay? Doesn't Listen, mean.
Dude, I am going to pray for you both, but I'm saying these.
First of all, please don't pray for me. That is not going to reflect well on you. All
right. Okay? I'm not praying for either one of you. You both go to hell as far as I care. But the Stickman Flash games were awesome as shit. That's all I'm going to say.
We all like different types of games. It's fine.
Lordy, lordy.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying.
What happened? We just lost it. We've been recording for like a half hour, and we're not even know. What are you reading?
I haven't read anything but news stories about first-person shooters. I'm just going to say it right now.
Okay, good. I'm glad that you went first. I'll go second again. I read the best book of the semester. I'm so jacked about it. What are you laughing about? Oh, it's by Karen Barrett or Broad or... I don't know exactly how you say it. And it's called Meeting the Universe Halfway, Quantum Physics and the Entanglement of Matter and Meaning. And it is so good. Oh, I can't oversell this book enough. It was like a breath of fresh air among a Heidegger semester.
Okay, when you put it like that, I was going to say, what is it about the fresh air? But yeah.
Well, so she, like, the first line in the book, Matter and meaning are not separate elements. They are inextricably fused together, and no event, no matter how energetic, can tear them asunder. Like, it's just awesome. So she goes back to, like, quantum physics with, like, Bohr and Heisenberg. And she, like, looks at their experiments and then, like, uses that to talk about meaning and the world and matter and how we can sort of make shit happen. So what I loved about it is that she takes Latour's sort of actor network theory and sort of blows it out of the water and posits this type of understanding things that pays so much more attention, or at least allows you to pay so much more attention to things like race and gender and stuff like that. So this is, going forward, this is my new methodology. I am completely in love with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Neat. What's her name again?
Karen Barad. KarenBarad. Meeting the Universe Halfway. Mm. So good. There's math in it too, but I skipped that.
Yeah. You skipped the math.
Oh my god, there's some pretty serious math.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. You done?
Yeah.
I actually played. I went back this week and I was rereading Mackenzie Wark's.
I love that book.
Yeah, Gamer Theory.
Mm-hmm.
Which came out 2.0, which came out in the print version in 2007.
Ooh.
And I reread it on a lark because I took it away from my kid who was running around going, "Mama, I write in this," and so I grabbed it. While she was taking a bath, I was sitting next to her, playing duckies in the tub with one hand and reading Mackenzie Wark with the other, and she kept screaming at me, "Close the book." I didn't get to read much because she kept screaming at me to close the book. But, you know, what's interesting about it is that I don't know how well I received it the first time I read it. Mm-hmm. But for some strange reason, his use of classical rhetoric and, like, his use of Plato's allegory of the cave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really worked better for me this time around, and not necessarily in the way that it was written, because he uses it to talk specifically about gamers in a cave and immersion, which I can buy, but you know, it's kind of like, okay, been there, done that, moved on. Right. But to rethink it now for me, because of all the work that I'm doing with gamification, to think about the allegory of the cave, not just in terms of video games, but in terms of play, period. Right. Because, I mean, he's talking about gamers going into a cave, because you're not born into this cave of play.
Right.
When you're talking about just playing video games. So it doesn't line up very well with Plato's cave. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you think about it just in terms of play and the way that children learn to play and innately play, it makes a whole hell of a lot more sense.
Interesting.
And that's kind of where I am. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to take work and make him work for me. But to extend his kind of theory past video games and into kind of the Huizingan notion of play, right? Magic from the soul. From the very beginning. Right. So play from birth. Right. Mm-hmm. Basically, from when kids, you know, recognize that they are little human beings and they have these things called fingers and toes that they can play with. Right. So to extend it, it made a whole hell of a lot more sense and it worked a whole lot better for me. So that's kind of. Yeah. But I'm the only thing that I've been reading is game related anyway, other than, you know, 5,000 things in my Google Reader every day.
I know. I always liked work stuff. Yeah. Some of it. I thought his theory about, like, atopia, utopia, dystopia was so interesting. And, like, I've always wanted to do something with games as atopia.
Well, yeah, maybe I'll do a blog
post about that.
Yeah, you mentioned that in a previous podcast. I thought that was also interesting too, the idea of atopia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do something about that. That's cool.
Very cool. Yeah, that's kind of where I am. That's what I've been reading anyway.
Stuff.
What you drinking, folks? That Alex, doesn't sound too promising.
I have a ginger ale. I'm so lame this week. I had a South Street Smokehouse for dinner.
A what?
South Street Smokehouse. It's a barbecue place here in town.
It sounds awesome anyway.
I know. It's so good.
Really? I hate that place.
How can you hate that place?
Because I Something, do.
Anything called Smokehouse sounds like awesome.
It's super good. So yeah. I had a delicious IPA when I was eating that, but now I'm having a ginger ale because I'm lame. I have to get up early. You guys?
Well, I'm going to be even lamer. And
lamer than ginger ale?
Yes. I have been on the wagon, not surprisingly, to our regular listeners. Yeah, okay. I was going to say there must be laughter. So I am teetotaling as well. Enjoying some just plain old Diet Coke on the wagon.
Sam, please tell me you have some vodka or something.
Yeah, no, I don't.
We're all just I'm exhausted.
I'm sorry. I did not sleep well last night. Mm-hmm.
Sam and I were sending each other Facebook messages at like 4:30 in the morning. Like, why aren't you sleeping? Why aren't you sleeping? Touche.
Yep.
All.
So I have, I'm actually drinking Mountain Dew.
Man.
I needed something to keep me awake so that I could podcast tonight. Mm-hmm. I started drinking Mountain Dew earlier. Wow. Because I said that was going to keep me awake. And I fell asleep.
That was just that Dr. Blackman, yeah.
And now I'm drinking it because I wanted to.
This is a sad week for Not Your Mom's Gamer, that we're all drinking soda.
It is.
But that's
it
okay. Is.
But you know what I was wondering? We're at week 23. Will week 25 put us at Christmas? No.
No.
Okay. I can't do math. Weeks, I'm just asking.
4 weeks from today.
Oh, you guys are wiser than I. Gotcha.
Because
gotcha.
Week 20. Yeah. Oh.
Math.
Nope. It'll be the 6th.
It'll be the 15th.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Just curious.
Okay. So that's what we're drinking. That's always a ball. So we got to do better than this. We got to be drinking next time.
I know. Listen, there's so many like silences.
We
got to
be like liquored up.
That's what I'm saying. Like week 25, I said I might come down and we were going to have like the shizzle.
Well, if I'm in town, I have to go back to Minnesota. So.
Yeah. Well, it's going to, that's what I was wondering. We're going to hit close to the holidays.
School will still be in.
That'll be exam week, Alex.
Yeah.
Ish.
I don't have exams.
FYI. We're English people.
I invented exams, okay? So, news?
Well, that's kind of, yeah, there's a lot of links here. I already kind of spilled my news with the PETA and the...
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll share my news.
Mm-hmm. Please do.
There's some interesting news because I posted, my Catwoman poster talked about the Catwoman DLC and what that does for the future of games, not only in terms of used games, but also in terms of gamers who don't regularly connect their consoles to the internet and are able to validate codes and download 10% of the game because they don't have, you know, the internet in their house or have a console that connects to the internet, which I think is bullshit. A news story came out that statistically 56% of U.S. gamers regularly buy used games. Which I think is really interesting.
Do you buy used games?
No, I really don't. The closest I come to buying used games is if I get a game from Gamefly and I don't want to send it back and I keep it. But even then, it's rarely used because most of the stuff I get from Gamefly is like launch stuff. I rarely go back and, get old stuff. I put launch stuff in my queue most of the time. So like even with Modern Warfare 3, I got it the day after launch. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty sure I'm the first person to play it. So if I keep it, it'll be my, it'll, it won't be quote unquote used. Mm-hmm. And I just don't find usually that used games save you enough money, at least in my book, because you know, if a game's $59.99 at the store and I go to unnamed game shop, mm-hmm. I'll name it, and it's $54.99, really? $5 for a game that, you know, is questionable in the fact that it may have a scratch that I can't see, or it may not function properly, or the fact that I have to return it within X number of days at unnamed game shop in order to get my money back, which means I have to play through the entire thing and know that it's not like scratched halfway through, which puts me under additional pressure. No, I'd rather not do that. So the for not for $5, and because unnamed game store.
Yeah, I was gonna say it sounded almost yeah okay.
I was wondering if I had said it out loud.
Almost, it was just like unnamed. Yeah,
unnamed game store. Just doesn't discount used games enough for me. And most game stores that are selling used copies, they're buying them from kids. I mean, I've been in those game stores before when they're buying games for kids for like $10, but the resale is like $50.
It's like used textbooks.
It's exactly like used textbooks. And I talked about that in my post. It's exactly like used textbooks. It's the reason I never sold my textbooks back.
I never did, Samantha, either. As I read that, and I'm like, dude, neither did I. Yeah.
Right.
I always buy used games.
But you know what? That's why, in fact, that I was pushed towards, I don't know, unnamed game online version of Netflix, right? Because that seemed to make... you know, unnamed fly, mm-hmm. a game store that I thought, well, that kind of makes sense. Because I used to go to unnamed store too, and I thought, well, this isn't really.
I wish I was in on what the unnamed store was. we could talk about it later.
Don't you feel like you know?
Know what the unnamed game store is.
Stop it.
Oh, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, okay.
Alex needs some sleep.
I know. Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. So that was one.
Yeah.
Talked about this story before. The kid who confessed to raping and murdering a classmate in the World of Warcraft chat. It was a while back. He had raped and murdered a classmate.
Oh.
And he had gotten on like MSN Messenger to talk to his girlfriend and was like, well, meet me in WoW. I got something to tell you. And he told her in WoW that he had raped and murdered this other girl.
No, I don't know that I did know that. That's really weird.
So he got sentenced. He was 16, I believe. He was just sentenced to 10 years.
10?
Without the possibility of parole.
This is Canada, though, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's in British Columbia,
okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Canadian, unfortunately. Well.
Hey, what? Some of our very good friends are Canadian.
Like some of our very good friends are Ms. Canadian.
Patty Paul, but none, neither here nor there. Different justice system is what we're
right.
kind of pointing toward. Yeah.
But, you know, that's that. Mm-hmm.
So wow.
With that, a new study came out that said that gamer kids are more creative.
That I totally believe.
That is totally anti-intuitive, right? They always think, oh, they're not using their imaginations.
Mm. I think that it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah?
And I think that's, you know, gives you something to think about. Kids have to use their imagination. I mean, the reason that a lot of kids game is because they're looking for that. Once again, here it is, immersion that they can get from playing kind of the big, I don't want to call it big ticket, but, you know, real commercial off the shelf games that are our larger, big budget games more than anything else. And I think that that's
well, like, what would be, what do you mean, like an example?
Like a Skyrim, you know, like an Oblivion, like a Call of Duty, like, I mean, especially now that more of these games also have a series of books that go along with them.
Yeah, they do.
I mean, because we have a graduate student in our program who has kids that, you know, that, and one of her kids is interested in games, and because he plays games, is also reading some of the mm-hmm. of the books that go along with the games. You know who this is.
And if you think about it too, so I know so many people who playing Skyrim would be the most boring thing in the world. Because they pick up the remote and they're like, "This is stupid. I don't get it."
It's very liberal.
But then a lot of people, a lot of kids can pick up that remote and sort of transport themselves, immerse themselves in the game, mm-hmm. and they have to use their imagination to do that. Mm-hmm. That's how it makes sense to me too.
Yeah.
Well, I think I've shared it before that many of the people that I know who are gamers are often really avid readers. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't think they'd go hand in hand, but they do. I mean, we're talking about really intelligent people. You know, it's not drooler, Cheeto people. I mean, these people really are quite intelligent. They're some of the smartest folks we have.
Yeah. I think that's very cool. But it's actually that there's a study now that confirms exactly what we've known all along. And I'll skip a bunch of the other news stuff that I have, because there's one thing that I definitely want to throw out there is new numbers, right? Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 sold 6.5 million units in 24 hours in North America and Britain.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's, 24 hours, $400 million.
Wow,
which beat Black Ops.
You know, movies don't even touch that.
Black Ops sold what?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Bless you.
I should have muted that.
That was very punctuated though.
There you go. $360 million for Black Ops.
You know, like, what? Well, there's no movie that even approaches. I mean, like, what? Like, Avatar got $1 billion or whatever. But like, movies rarely approach that kind of money. You know, I mean,
and like, Avatar didn't get like $1 billion in 24 hours.
Yeah. No.
I posted what Skyrim got in 48 hours up there. Skyrim sold 3.5 million in 48 hours.
That's amazing.
Right. Yeah. And that's huge.
Well, that was the funny thing is that, you know, we were talking about Call of Duty launch. I have warned folks because I was like, okay, you know, if you got a lot of kids missing, here's why, right? Mm-hmm. In class. Because the guy at GameStop had told me that they were expecting damn near 1,000 people to pick up at midnight launch just at that one location. And we've got, at unnamed game store. we've got three unnamed game stores in town plus.
Oh, stop, Samantha.
I know. Plus X number of, you know, of other stores that are open, big box stores that are open 24 hours and places and other big box stores that are not open 24 hours, but we're opening at at midnight just to sell.
Well, one of the other of you posted it on, I think Samantha might have been you, on the Facebook, like the pictures of the kids that were lined up at outside 11:00. Unknown store that were
at 11 o'clock waiting. In the morning.
Yes.
They were lined up 13 hours early to pick up that game in the rain.
And that is amazing. You don't see that anymore for movies, anything.
That's awesome.
Pop culture, this is where it's at in terms of generating that kind of amazing zeal. Mm-hmm. I mean, what else do you call it? Phenomenal.
I like it too because it's sort of like an anachronism. Like, you can get the game at Walmart. There's no one waiting, you know.
Yeah.
But they sit outside game stores and wait in line. I think it's really cool.
It's like tradition. You know, it's like proving your mettle almost. Like
I go Black Friday shopping every year and I don't want anything. I don't have any money. I can't buy stuff. But I like to just go and yell at people when they're cutting in line and stuff, you know what I mean? I almost got in a fight with like a 6-something-foot tall dude last year.
I love that.
I cussed him out in front of everybody. It was awesome.
Because Alex, that's totally who you are.
I know, right?
She just wants to go play badass. She doesn't want to
She doesn't take shit, yeah.
That's where I get my aggression. I go yell at shoppers.
You don't fuck with Minnesotans.
That's right.
Kind of the bottom line.
I mean, we sit on ice. That's what we do for fun.
That's so. Right.
We should talk about one other thing really quick. The Steam forums got hacked. Did you guys hear about this?
Yeah, I heard about that.
Only from what you posted. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I did. When I signed on, I did get a announcement that popped up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah,
that was I guess we don't really have a lot to say about it, except that it happened.
Well, it happened. Seems significant. They were alerting their customers that, I mean, as far as I understand, I have a free, account, but like if somebody has their credit card information, they're saying, check your information, check your credit cards, check your statements, because they're saying, look, we think we've got the problem fixed, but if we don't, so I mean, it's significant enough that, no, you're right. I was downloading something and it was a pretty substantial document that they had pop up. So,
yeah.
And that sucks. I mean, who does stuff like that? Come on.
Well, same kind of people who hack PlayStation Network.
Yeah, it's probably the exact same people.
They're not the evil empire.
I know, they're so lovable. Should we get on to our main issue?
Yeah, our issue of the week.
It's the Not Your Mama's Gamer video game time capsule.
Okay, so this week we are doing our third in a series of time capsules. And the way that our time capsules work is that we are choosing games thematically and entering into a time capsule, both games and the hardware necessary to play them, into a time capsule. That will be buried and excavated in no less than 100 years. Because we see games as cultural artifacts and definitely some, and definitely things that have something to say about who we are and what we are as a society, this segment, the series anyway, now exists. So this week we have chosen for our time capsule, dun-da-da, because Alex Lane loves them.
Yes, I do.
And we love Alex.
Woo! First-person shooters.
First-person shooters, yay!
So, I have actually been playing a lot of first-person shooters in the last couple of weeks that I didn't talk about because I didn't want to... most of them weren't new because I didn't want to kind of scoop what our segment was for today. But because Alex loves first-person shooters so much, we're going to start with her this week.
Alex.
Ooh. All right. Well, okay, so when I was thinking about this time capsule, I was thinking about, like, the most representative games that we could... Whoa.
That was my chair, sorry.
Not me.
I thought someone opened a creepy door.
That was me.
I really do see the Call of Duty series as the game of the generation. Whether you play first-person shooters or not, kids of a particular age, that's their game. And it sells more copies than other games. And it, I think it innovates in some ways also about what sort of game is expected at that high of a level. And so I was going through the Call of Duty series games, trying to decide which one I thought should go into the time capsule. Mm-hmm. And I didn't pick Modern Warfare 3 because I didn't think it didn't change enough from Modern Warfare 2 for it to be anything too spectacular. And it didn't incorporate the cool changes from Black Ops. So well, I love it and I think it's cool and I'm really enjoying it. That was not the one I picked. I did not pick Black Ops either because even though I certainly enjoyed it, it is pretty, it's almost no one's favorite of the series.
Really?
Yeah. I think it was just, it's, the Modern Warfares I think have a cool sort of theme and story. But Black Ops is sort of, the maps are all over the map.
yeah.
you know, is that, does that sound right based on your experience?
Mm-hmm.
Sam. So, yeah. So I didn't pick Black Ops either, but I picked Modern Warfare 2. Cause that's my favorite in the series. Almost everyone who plays it, it's their favorite in the series. And I find myself going, even when Black Ops was pretty new, I still find myself going back and playing Modern Warfare 2. So it was, I think it's really interesting to have first person shooters, sort of be political in that they call into question the types of actions that we, take or have taken and recast them. And people who read the blog know that I'm sort of obsessed with the historicity of video games. So how do we represent things historically, and accurately, but not perpetuate the ideas? And I think, having a sort of place-based game, does that opens up some of those doors for you. So we can go back and revisit some of the places that major historical events have happened. Modern Warfare 3 is more futuristic. They're talking about what will happen, in World War 3. So there's all cities, mm-hmm. you know, London and New York and stuff like that are destroyed that you're having war in. So that is, Modern Warfare 2 is my choice for my favorite, first-person shooter. So I think,
What sort of got me here is I like your idea that it, you know, represents history, but it doesn't represent the concepts, ideologies, whatever, that got us into the trouble that we got in history. You know, it's like history, people that don't history are condemned to repeat it, but you're saying, yes, we play through history, but it also offers us an opportunity to kind of revisit the notions, ideas, whatever, that got us in trouble in the first place.
Right. And because you can sort of see these areas and these events that had like tons of ideological power for us and,
right.
and can make a big part of like who our culture considers itself to be. Mm-hmm. So in that way it reflects. The one of the problematic things about it would definitely be the lack of gender, right? You can't be a woman in any of the Call of Duty series, so that certainly would not reflect
right
any well of the culture. Call of Duties.
You right, and that's one thing that it would definitely say, right? If somebody, when they dig this time capsule, it's like, oh, okay, well, women never went into battle,
right?
Because you can't be a woman.
It's like G.I. Jane never happened,
and you really can't, and they're not customizable characters either. Right.
Okay.
In Modern Warfare 2 and in Modern Warfare 3, mm-hmm. you jump from body to body, in a very quantum leap kind of way.
Sure. It's really interesting though, like so yeah, you're right, you can jump around, but in Modern Warfare 3 the intro is all about being one man, like you're one man who is going to change this whole outcome of this World War 3, but you jump all over, like you're an African militia and then you're like a Russian army, you know?
Yeah. So, but you're still one man.
Yeah.
You're just a different man every time.
I know.
Well, you're kind of an everyman, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Sort of what they're trying to offer, I suppose.
And damn you, Alex Lane, I let you go first. But you helped make my decision.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Because I was kind of waffling with my choice of what I would put in a time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
And before I tell you which one I have chosen to put in a time capsule, there was another close runner up, for very strange reasons, and it would have been Gears of War, either 2 or 3 in my mind.
That's too strange. That makes sense.
No, I don't think that's strange. Yeah.
because of kind of the, not only because of the gameplay and not only because you can like, chainsaw people to fucking death, or aliens. because of the racial and sexual diversity of the characters that you can actually, play as a soldier in Modern Warfare 3, I think it's pretty interesting. But I also think that there's now I'm thinking about this because somebody said that we can make a drinking game out of the number of times that we say interesting.
In the podcast or just in general?
In the podcast. Do we? So I'm trying not to say interesting.
Oh, that's weird. You would have warned us about that. I would have stopped saying that word.
It was one of our listeners on, and they posted that they love our podcast, but we say interesting a lot.
Seriously,
I say, and this is. Let me just, in my own defense, I say interesting, so I don't say fucked up.
I think that's true.
Well, it's sort of like the academic go-to when you don't want to insult people, and
right. I know.
I'm like, that's interesting.
Interesting. Also, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah. I do that in grading. I'm like, interesting concept. Yeah.
So that being said, it definitely has a lot to say, I think, with the use of aliens as the bad guys. Right. I mean, if we think about what alien means, what aliens mean for us kind of in contemporary society, I think that there's definitely some
intriguing,
intriguing stuff going on.
There's some fucked up stuff going on.
There's some fucked up stuff going on in Gears of War. So yeah, now I'm like totally lost. In Gears of War, that I think would stand up to some interesting cultural critique. Yes. That being said, I have not chosen Gears of War 1, ooh, 2, or 3
twist
to go into our time capsule. But I was waffling back and forth between Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. And ultimately, I have chosen, not only because Alex Lane chose Modern Warfare 2, but I've chosen Modern Warfare 3.
All right. Ooh, SmackDown fight.
And I think Alex is kind of spot on that it doesn't necessarily do anything new in terms of gameplay. Mm-hmm. But I think Modern Warfare 3 does something that previous war games have not done, is it's very in your face and it meets us where we are, because it does it does take place in kind of the current space, and because of the locales that they choose. We are, you start out and you are in the campaign anyway, you start out and you are a soldier in New York City. Right. You are going through bombed and burned out buildings on Wall Street. You are you can look through like holes in buildings and up out of the water in the river and see buildings that are that seem to have been crashed into or at least bombed. Mm. And this is something that I think is kind of really kind of heart-wrenching for a lot of folks still. Sure. And I think it was really ballsy to do it. Mm. Because and I said this earlier when they first made the announcement, is I asked, is it too soon?
Right.
It you feel it. And I know that when I'm playing through the campaign and I was playing through the New York missions, just kind of looking at it, I was like, wow. Mm. You know, it does, you know, to see they don't have the twin towers, but they do have tall towers.
Mm-hmm.
That have been bombed, that have parts missing, that have that are smoking and on fire. There are, you know, bodies there were bodies floating in bodies of water. Mm. There's all kinds of interesting stuff going on. Yeah. And because the game's so new, I won't do any spoilers. But just like with Modern Warfare 2, where there was the No Russians level,
mm-hmm.
Where that was kind of the shock and awe moment where you go through and you murder everyone in a in the airport. There's a shock and awe moment in this one. That I think hits a whole hell of a lot closer to home for folks. Mm-hmm. And interesting. I can't stop not saying it. Interestingly enough, in the campaign, when they start talking about, because you also, after you leave like the New York locale, you go to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
They also make reference to the No Russians, they make reference to the No Russians scenario from Modern Warfare 2.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, they're like, well, after what happened at the airport, a lot of Russians still don't trust the U.S., blah, 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 blah.
Okay. So, like, oh, shit, that was me.
Yeah, I was like, oh, damn, I did that.
That's wild.
That was a couple of years ago. They haven't forgotten about that shit yet. Yeah, okay. I mowed down a couple of hundred people.
Crazy.
But it almost brings about a second Cold War. And you play through that politically as well, which can give you the opportunity to call up and think about the original Cold War. If it's done properly and you think about it or you work through it with someone. Sure. So for that reason, even though it's not offering anything necessarily new, but just in terms of kind of not only the shock and awe, but also the locale and also just kind of the close to homeness of it all. I'm choosing Modern Warfare 3.
I like it.
Oh, booyah, nice. Alex Lane.
Booyah, indeed. I have been booyah. Woo-hoo.
Booyah. Well.
Follow that booyah up, Sarah.
Yeah, I don't even know that I can, yo. Well, as you know, ladies, I took our post-apocalyptic podcast as seriously. So I have been in deep research and study on this topic for quite some weeks, right, since it was announced. So I took to a Facebook group and I said, help me out, what would be your choice first person shooters, and they gave me a bunch of ideas, and also I took to the web and I looked up all variety of first-person shooters and what would be, anything from BioShock, which has already been mentioned, because certainly it's very rich in its graphics and its narrative. I mean, it has many levels of complexity that would certainly make it applicable for the treasure chest time capsule. My good friends and my research also directed me in a variety of other ways. And my blog post, which would be posted either tonight or tomorrow, I hope to have it up soon, is also contemplating kind of the psychology of the first-person shooter. What stops me and what fascinates me is that you're being put into the shoes of the character. I mean, they're the avatar and you are merged. It's not like I can look at Duke Nukem and see, like a blonde buff figure. I am the blonde buff figure. So that fascinates me to no end, that very few other entertainment mediums offer me the opportunity to actually wear the skin, actually own the perspective of the character, the avatar, the figure, whatever. And so as someone who's naturally drawn to that stuff, I can't help it, narrative work, creative writer, I'm fascinated by the first person shooter. And so I've played DSX, I've played BioShock, I have had my experience with Gears of War, and what my group of friends kept directing me to was GoldenEye. Right, and they were saying the old school one, no, Nintendo 64.
64, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, oh, this is, one of the classics, And I played GoldenEye for the PS2, which I'm sure had been adapted, but still, as far as I remember, that was popping the cherry for me with first person shooters, if I can be so crude is to offer that reference. But yeah, that was my first experience with a first person shooter, and I was like, oh, this is something new. I've never been in this perspective before, and what does this perspective offer me that, what are we learning from this? I remember a friend, Mark Santos, he was mentioned several times probably in our podcast. He and I collaborated quite a bit, but we did the Silent Hill, The Room, that particular game in the series. And what was curious about that game is they offered you third person and first person perspective. And when you were outside of the room, you were in third person. When you were inside of the room, you were first person. And we tried to offer some sort of psychoanalytic rationale for why it would give you these two different you know, perspectives. Mm-hmm. And we were saying, well, you know, outside in the world, outside, you know, the room, you are a subject in the symbolic order. When you're in the room, you are still kind of not quite breaking down the barrier between self and other. I don't know if I'm going to go quite that deep with our first person shooters, but I mean, I think there's a lot that could be, made of that kind of breakdown in that separation. But so long story short, as I pondered this, I played several games and I did much research. I am going to go old school on this, and we can say S-K-O-O-L. But I think we got to give a nod to the original on this. And I'm going to go with Wolfenstein in all of its controversial glory, indeed. Because I played it, you know, not all the way through, but I did play it, and I was like,
Wolfenstein.
Yeah, you've got to give the nod to the granddaddy and what it was kind of offering that hadn't been provided before, you know, and all of its controversial glory. So I am going to put Wolfenstein, which I think fits perfectly in our time era, with even with its Nazi rationale and its swastikas. I mean, I think there's something to be said for all of that, quite frankly. That's my pick.
All right.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting pick.
to say the least.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. And I didn't mean to say interesting. It's definitely connected to the way that I was thinking about first person shooters as cultural artifacts.
Yeah.
And the way that they've progressed or evolved, right?
Right.
Because we think about the old school first person shooters like Wolfenstein and Doom and the ones that ran the gamut way back in the day. Well, because of hardware limitations as well, and where games were, and the fact that they were still, you know, a fairly new entertainment medium, they weren't as immersive as they are today. Right. But they definitely kind of chose, even in a surface way, like with Wolfenstein and the Nazi imagery, things that we knew well, right? And made an attempt to almost separate us from the shooter. Right? It wasn't meant to necessarily immerse you in the character in such a way that you started to feel that you were that character. Right. It wasn't a Baudrillard kind of simulacra thing. It was like, okay, so I am, you know, first, second, third order simulation here, and this is where I am, and I'm feeling like I'm this character, in the same way that first person shooters today ask you to.
Right. And, you know, and I would even go so far as to say, when I was playing Wolfenstein, I was feeling very much the same as I felt when I watched Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds. It was almost like cathartic. Like, I'm going to fucking shoot the hell out of you Nazi bastards because it feels good, you know, and only in this particular historic context would that be possible. You know what I mean? Like, you know, maybe 100 years from now, it's like, okay, whatever. And 100 years ago, they don't get it. You know, and even people in the time didn't quite understand. Only us now who are situated, our grandparents, my grandparents fought in that war. And it's like, I want to fucking kill you because I know what you did. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think it offers a certain cathartic moment that can only be provided right now. And I think that's interesting to me. That was probably, I mean, the Hitler, and they had the propaganda posters. That was one of the most fascinating things about the whole Wolfenstein thing that really grasped me, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting because, here I say again.
Yeah, I know.
I'm the one who keeps doing it, clearly. Because it's there because it was political in a different way. It was definitely in a different way. And I wonder what it says about us that we have become this kind of shock and awe society. right? Where we want the No Russians episode, where we want the No Russians mission, where we want the mission that we get in Modern Warfare 3, that I'm still not going to disclose for people who don't know it or haven't gotten it, haven't seen it on the internet, and haven't gotten to it in the campaign yet. Where we game companies feel the need to post that disclaimer when you start playing the game, when you start the campaign, that says, hey, there's going to be some real fucked up shit in this campaign. Right. Do you want to skip that? If you skip it, it's not going to affect your completion rate. It's not going to keep you from getting any achievements. It's just going to let you skip the fucked up shit.
Right.
and I think that says a lot.
I think it does. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're living in an era right now where we do have some people who say, oh, I don't think the Holocaust happened, or, oh, you know, slavery in America, come on. You know, like, there are people that doubt historical situations, that incidences, that these are documented, you know, but we still have people that doubt it. And this goes back to Alex's points about the historicity. Is that a word? I don't know.
Historicity.
Historicity of games and what they can teach us. And I think, you know, I think they do have a lot of value that hasn't been adequately articulated or mined. You know, like, yeah, these things happened and we're working through them. And this is what is allowing us to work through them. So, yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Let's work through our traumas because they're out there.
Definitely. Mm. Cool beans.
We need to give away our stuff.
Oh, true enough.
We do. So, in the ultimate deals for broke-ass gamers, we have our two contests from last time. The first was to win a copy of Skyrim on the platform of your choice. and entries were gotten by sharing our link on Facebook. And then choosing with a random number generator, which we actually saved us some time and used our random number generator before the show started this time, so you didn't have to listen to us doing that. So our winner of the Skyrim contest, drum roll please, is Caitlin Spronk.
Oh,
Caitlin Spronk. Congratulations.
Woo-hoo! So, Caitlin, if you will contact us, send us your platform of choice and your mailing address, we will get you a copy of Skyrim sent out to you ASAP. Thank you for playing.
Very cool.
Awesome.
Good for Caitlin Spronk.
Very cool. Great prize. Absolutely.
And we had a second contest to
win.
This
is the big one that everyone's been waiting for.
That's exactly what I was going to say. We had a second contest because, you know, you have to have like the pre-fight and then the fight if you're, you know,
yes,
pugilist. Right. This is the main event right here. To win a wonderful Purdue University T-shirt. This person will need to send us their T-shirt size.
Yes.
Otherwise, we're going to send you an extra small. And your mailing address. And we will get you your T-shirt in the mail. So, the winner of our Purdue T-shirt, drum roll please, is Richard Jones.
Yay, Richard Jones.
Richard Jones.
Sari, you have a terrible drum roll. You need to work on that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
We need to get a drum machine.
I accept my inadequacies, yeah.
Well, congratulations, Caitlin Spronk and Richard Jones.
Yes. Oh, woo.
Thank awesome. You for listening. Thank you for supporting us.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those are the ultimate deals for broke-ass gamers. But for those who did not win, we do have some other deals for broke-ass gamers.
Yes, we do. Should I read those? So on Steam, we have Elder Scrolls, 75%, Elder Scrolls Oblivion, 75% off. And that ends Thursday. So get on that very soon. And then Sins of a Solar Empire Trinity, 25% off. Usually they don't have the weekend deals up till Thursday. Since we're recording on Wednesday, I don't have those yet. So look forward to the weekend deals there also. But those are what's going on right now, the midweek deals. Toys R Us is buy one, get one 40% off on Wii and 3DS games. So stock on up for those Christmas presents. And Good Old Games has Alien Shooter and Expansion 60% off. So it's like $2. So you can't really go wrong with something that's $2, right?
No.
Especially to play an old school game, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Woo!
And in the time that we did this podcast, I now have Trine. So I'm going to go ahead and go play that. No, I'm going to sleep tonight.
Yeah, right.
I know.
Yeah, come on.
Alex Lane, we know you for your work. She'll be up for like 12 hours straight playing that game until she like finishes it.
If it's that good, then yes, I absolutely will.
So, remember, folks, we definitely look forward to hearing from you. Send us email. Oh, we have an email.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I almost forgot. Send us email. Yes, you can send us email at nymgamer @gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook. We're under Not Your Mama's Gamer, of course, and send us messages there. You can follow us on Twitter at NYM Gamer. And then, of course, there is our wonderful blog where you can interact with us. You can have discussions with us about what we post in the interim between the times that we record, as well as having conversations with us about the podcast episodes themselves at www.nymgamer.com. So this week, we actually have an email from, believe it or not, Richard Jones, who won our new t-shirt. Woo-hoo.
All
right. So I'm going to take a second to read this, and we'll answer his question at the end. And Richard writes, a few things worth pointing out about Saints Row. Not that I disagree with you, just points of fact that might be interesting. I think this is Sarah, because she was talking about Saints Row last
year. Yeah,
we go, Sarah.
Oh, thanks.
In Saints Row 2, gender wasn't a binary choice, but rather was on a slider. You could make your tune more feminine or more masculine. Picking male or female just gave you some presets. In Saints Row 3, Saints Row 3 or Saints Row the 3rd. They went with choosing between a binary, but you could still give them a male or female voice regardless. Both sexes in Saints Row have a sex appeal slider. For men, it controls how big the package is, and with women, it controls how big their breasts are.
Yeah, boobs.
Clothing options are not restricted by gender at all. Not even facial hair, at least in 2. You can go naked as either gender, though they blur out the breasts on women and the buttocks and groin of both men and women characters. You can make your skin metallic purple. The previous game let you be morbidly obese, though for some reason it's more limited in Saints Row 3. I would guess it's so you don't clip through things. For the sake of context, Saints Row, in contrast to Grand Theft Auto, has a mood of pure chaos and silliness, and a theme of the city is your playground, do whatever. So, there actually is a mini game where you flash people, which you can do as a man or a woman. NPCs' reactions do not seem to be affected by your sex or gender. You can also go streaking. I don't know about 3, but in 2, you can be a pimp and a, use quotation marks, hoe to earn, quote unquote, respect regardless of sex or gender.
Interesting. What? I mean, that really isn't like genuinely interesting.
That is interesting, yeah. Yeah, Richard, you really got us like thinking about how many times we use that word.
I know.
Yeah.
Hopefully you've been playing that drinking game at night, because you should be real, real liquored up by now.
It'd be interesting to see how interestingly drunk he is.
Yes. Really interesting, that.
Yeah.
So, to go back to the email. But keep in mind, the other diversions and side quests were similarly shocking or ridiculous. One has you escorting a drug dealer. Another has you trying to get hit by cars on purpose. Another has you driving a sewage truck through a neighborhood and spraying poop all over it.
What?
One of the weapons Oh, yeah, I've heard about this one. One of the weapons in 3 is a giant purple dildo.
Say what?
There was a game mode called Horde, Horde, W-H-O-R-E, apostrophe D. We talked about this one before.
Yeah.
Parody of Horde, H-O-R-D-E, where you have to fight waves and waves of sillier and sillier enemies, which includes both male and female prostitutes. Okay. Does treating both male and here's the question. Does treating both male and females the same with the added context of silliness make it any better? No. I don't know, but I thought it was worth pointing out.
What a great question.
Mm. I said no reactively.
Yeah. I don't know. On some level, like if we're going to think about it like intellectually from the damage it causes for people to see that and the behavior it perpetuates, maybe it causes, maybe it's problematic. But at the same time, when the context of the entire game is silliness, ridiculousness, and I mean, it's still a problem, certainly, I guess, but I don't know.
I think as long as all of the kind of factors are the same for all characters, regardless of what they look like, who they are, what their gender is, what their sex is, you know, as long as that the level of silliness is the same for all, right? And they're not specifically stereotyping folks according to what they look like and what they do.
Right.
What they look like and who they are, kind of physically and biologically. Mm-hmm. I think at times we have to be able to laugh at ourselves.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know what? It's hilarious to go around hitting people with a giant purple dildo. You know, like there's problems with that, of course, but like in the context of a hilarious game, I don't know.
I don't know that. I don't find giant purple dildos funny. But, you know, that's me. But it's not because I'm, like, necessarily offended by them. It's just that I don't think they're funny. But I can see that.
Yeah. We'll have to watch that scene and see if it's funny.
How many good beers point. It takes before it's funny.
Yeah.
That's right. We can do the test, scientific study. It took 10 beers before Samantha left.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Samantha.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, that there is a point at which we have to be able to laugh at ourselves, mm-hmm. right? And laugh at kind of the craziness that goes on around us, and to have that ability to kind of step outside of the critical for a moment. I mean, and that's the thing that, as I was talking about earlier, I can't do for most times. Mm-hmm. Even when I am playing a game simply for enjoyment, things still stick out to me that kind of critically, ethically bother me. Oftentimes, usually, they don't necessarily affect my enjoyment of the game unless they're just too out there, mm-hmm. like Red Dead Redemption.
Right.
That was the latest one for me that just made me go, oh my God, I just cannot play this because of what was going on. It's the latest, but it won't be the last, I'm sure. because there have been games before it. I still haven't played Bioshock 2 because there's just too much of kind of this weird undertone of child molestation going on in Bioshock 2 that keeps me from playing it. And it's not there necessarily, but it just feels that way. And there's, you know, lots of stuff with children that bothers me. Mm-hmm. That I won't talk more about, but there's lots of that kind of stuff that makes me just go, I can't. But then, you know, we have to be able to, you know, dress up in certain ways and, you know, make an obese female mustachioed pimp,
right.
Who's running a stable of men and running around hitting people with a purple dildo from time to time just to kind of play through and play with those sexual stereotypes or those cultural stereotypes in such a way that, you know, make us kind of giggle from time to time.
Well, and when things are so serious all the time, especially, you know, in games. It's, like you said, it's sort of nice to be able to step outside of that and sort of look at the ridiculousness of some of the situations.
Right. I say that now, but I'll probably play the game and be so horribly offended by the character that I create that I won't play it again.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited to hear about that.
Exactly. Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. Thank you, Richard, for your email.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
for
definitely.
The rest of the folks out there, please feel free to, like I said, send us email. You can record questions for us. We have yet to have a recorded question. I don't think we've had a recorded question.
No, we haven't.
We have a recorded question that we can play and respond to so we can hear your melodious voices. you can even, if you, you know, are so desirous of doing, meet up with us live and we'll Skype you in to ask a question and maybe talk with us for a few minutes about your question / answer from time to time.
That's always fun.
That could be fun. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
We've done that before. We can do that again.
Awesome.
So until next time, folks, when we are gearing up for episode 24.
24.
Wow.
I know. Wow. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Where we will, because we've done zombies, games of the apocalypse, first person shooters. Yeah. I'm down for RPGs for the next one.
All right.
Ladies.
All right. I'm feeling it.
I think that's totally legit.
Yeah.
See, I just sprung that one on everybody. Ah.
Oh, no, I'm good with that.
I'm good with it. I feel you. I'm on it.
I chose that one on the fly because we had not chosen. Because for those of you out there, I'm going to tell you this really quick story. I am a very ducks in a row kind of person, and I have to have my things in order to do things in a certain way. My little munchkin, who is not allowed in my office, my home office, when I'm not in here, at some point snuck into my office and stole my podcasting notebook. So somewhere... It is covered with pictures of stickers. It's probably covered in stickers and 3-year-old drawn pictures of Spider-Man, which is her current superhero of choice that she's drawn on everything. And she made me buy her Spider-Man t-shirt and a Spider-Man hoodie this week.
Awesome.
Already.
I love this kid.
So somewhere in this house, my podcasting notebook is hiding from me, and it's really freaking me out because I don't have my stuff. So that's why we hadn't chosen our topic, because I didn't have my list of things to do before we started. So we're going to do RPGs next time for episode 24. On that note, I had to vent a little bit. Thank you. Thank you for listening. but until then, stay safe, shoot stuff, kill dragons.
And have a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, woohoo.
Buy lots of stuff on Black Friday.
Oh,
yeah.
Just don't cut in line in front of Alex Lane.
Don't kill your relatives.
Yeah. And send it all to me. enjoy your long weekend. And, of course, ladies, game on.
Game on.